Okay, top gentlemen, we're on Daf Lamed Aleph on Beis, and we're on the very bottom of the Amud. Amar Rav Huna. Now, this comment of Rav Huna is connected to the Mishnah of Niktam Rosho. Okay, then. Now, Niktam Rosho in the Mishnah is absolutely possible, and it literally means that the top of the lulav was broken off. Now, there are a number of different possibilities as what Niktam Rosho means. Let me just jolt your memory. And if you turn back for a moment without losing the place, please, to Chof Tes Amid Beis, the second Tosfos. And Tosfos raises two possibilities as to what Niktam Rosho means. The thrust of his Tosfos is that Niktam Rov Olim Elyonim, the majority of the top leaves were broken. That's Niktam Rosho. Tosfos offers a second possibility, which he rejects, and that is that the Tiomes was broken. Now the Tiomes is that one leaf that goes all the way up to the top, and it has two parts to it. Like every single olev, the lulav has two parts. You could split it in half. Tosfos rejects that interpretation because Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi is going to be quoted here on Daf Lamed Beis as saying that Mitlat Tiomes, even if the Tiomes was completely removed, well, why does Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi have to tell me that Kiddush? If Niktam, if it's broken, it's possible, then certainly if it was removed, it's possible. So in any event, the bottom line is that the Maskanas HaTosfos, the final conclusion of this Tosfos, is that Niktam Rosho means that most of the Olim HaElyonim were broken. Okay then? So that's what we have. Okay. Now, Amar Rav Huna makes a qualification, and he says the following. Yes, Niktam Rosho is possible. But Loshanu Ella Niktam Rosho, only the case of Niktam Rosho is possible, which means the top of the lulav was broken. However, if it was not Niktam Rosho, but rather it was Nisdak Rosho, so it's not that the top leaves of the lulav were completely broken, but rather the top leaves of the lulav was split. Do you follow? There's a difference between split, which is nistak, and niktam. Niktam means it was broken off. So if Huna says that the Mishnah only went as far as passing a very extreme case, which is called niktam rosho, but in the case which is a less extreme case, which is only nistak rosho, and there's only a split, kosher. And what the Gemara is going to do now is quote a long brisa that has a whole list of different kinds of disqualified lulavim, disqualifications in lulavim, and on that list of a disqualified lulav, we're going to find nistak, which is exactly the case that according to Rav Huna, is kosher. So this is going to be a problem for Rav Huna. Okay then? So the Gemara says, Nistak, v'nistak kosher, is it really true that Nistak, if the lulav on top is split, it's kosher, as Rav Huna would say. V'atanya, we have a brisa. So now we want to go through the various cases of the brisa. The first case of the brisa is lulav kafuf. How would you translate the word kafuf? It's bent over. Okay, so you have a lulav that the top of the lulav is bent over. And that's going to be posel. That's called kafuf. Now, Rabosa, as you and I know, the lulav is meant to be straight on top. But very often you'll find a lulav that's bent over. And we're going to have to try to figure out how bad is bad. You know, at what point is kafuf completely possible? It's so kafuf, it's so bent over, In Yiddish we call it Eingebeugen, if anybody is familiar with that phrase. And at that point it's so kafuf that it's possible. Later on, the Brice is going to have another case called Akum, Ayin Kuf Vav Mem. We'll see it soon, so you know, I don't have to write it on the board. And that case is also possible, but then we have to figure out what's the difference between Akum and Kafuf. Akum means also bent over. So why does the Brice have to list both Kafuf and Akum? And now at this point we want to turn to Daf Lamed Beis, Kiminyan Lev, and this is the heart of the matter. And it says kavutz. This is also a case of pasul. So I'm going to come and wake you guys up in the middle of the night, and I'm going to ask you what a kavutz is. Okay, just to see if you remember it well. So what's a kavutz? So first of all, let's look at Rashi on Lamed Aleph Amid Beis about kavuf. Rashi says that nistak is nistaku roshe ha'olim, and kavuf is rosho kavuf. It's bent over kargamon, like a case of someone who's bent over. And then if you take a look on Daf Lamed Beis Amud Aleph, Kavutz, he says, this is a whole different story. There's nothing distorted or split in the lulav, but rather, it's yotzim b'shidra shalo uktzin. Anybody know what uktzin are? Thorns, right? There are thorns coming out of the spine of the lulav. Now that doesn't sound like such a dramatic change in the lulav. And we're going to have to figure out what's going on over here. The Ramban says that what Rashi has in mind is a pasuk, Drachea Darchinon, the ways of the Torah are pleasant. And if you're going to hold on to a lulav and there are thorns coming out of the side of the shidra, of the spine, that's not a pleasant experience. You're going to get yourself full of cuts. And what that means is that the classical psul that applies to the Dalet Minim, what's the classical psul that's written in the Torah itself, the requirement that's not met? Creates hadar. That creates hadar, which reflects on the beauty of the Dalet Minim, the tsura, as they look like. According to Ramban, that's not the case, that's not relevant to the case of kavutz, because kavutz is a different psul. It's a different disqualification that comes under the category of Drachea Darchei Noam. So we're all fans of Darchei Noam. Some people even learned in Darchei Noam. And Darchei Noam means it's got to be pleasant. The ways of the Torah are pleasant. Now this Ramban is an unbelievable chiddush. I'll tell you why. The Gemara later on is going to quote the pasuk Drachea Darchei Noam, but in an entirely different context. The Gemara later is going to try to figure out what the lulav is. You know, what species qualifies as a lulav. And there's a certain species that we'll get to later which has prickly sides to it. And the Gemara is going to say that can't be a lulav because Rachel Darchi Noah. Here, we're talking about a lulav. We're not talking about something that has a questionable classification. It's definitely the species of a palm tree. We have no doubt that this is a lulav tree. And yet, the Ramban says that it's got to be Drachea Darchei Noam. So not like the Gemara, which says that Drachea Darchei Noam is a means to determine what is the species of a lulav, to the exclusion of certain things that might look like a lulav, but they have thorns coming out of them on the side. Rashi now, and the Rabban embellishes Rashi, is telling you that a lulav, even if it is a lulav, it's got to fulfill the requirement of La Drachea Darchei Noam. And if it's not Noam, then it's possible. It's a new category of a psul. And again, until now we've used Noam just as a method of determining what is a lulav, what qualifies as a lulav in terms of the different kinds of lulavim. I think I mentioned to you when we started that there are tens and maybe hundreds of types of palm trees, and we're not sure whether each one of them produces a lulav in halachic terms. So Drachea Darchei Noam is one method of determining whether this is a lulav or it's not a lulav. Now we're saying it's a lulav, but it's possible. Why it doesn't fulfill the requirement of Drachea Darchei Noam. And what we're going to try to analyze a little bit later on today is whether or not there's a difference lahalacha between classifying something as hadar, meaning it's lacking in hadar, and that's the deficiency, or noam as a separate category. In any event, what do we have so far? We have kavuts. And what do we say about kavuts? Kavuts is relates to which part of the lulav. Remember, we have, let's say, two major parts of the lulav. We'll add the tiomas as a third part. But basically, the lulav is going to be divided into two parts. The shidra and the olim. Until now, in the Braisa, when we were discussing the case of nistak, if you remember, Rashi says, nistaku rashe ha'olim. So we're talking about the leaves of the lulav. And then we had the case of kafuf. And Rashi again says, rosho. We're talking about the top of the lulav. But now when we turn to Lamed Beis Amud Aleph, the Braisa continues with kavuts. Now we're talking about the shidra, right? Again, if you have your own Gemara, please underline Rashi on the top line, the word shidra, okay? Because that's going to be very relevant to us, that Rashi, in some cases, says the psul is in the olim, in the top of the lulav, and in other cases, Rashi points to the shidra. And here, in the case of kavuts, Rashi tells us that these thorns are coming out of the shidra. Fine. Now we have the case of saduk. Now presumably the word saduk means exactly what Rav Huna spoke about on the previous Amud when he said nistak, which means that the roshei ha'olim, the top leaves, was split. The only problem is this price is listing all those cases that are what? Possible. Rav Huna said that nistak is kosher. This brisa, which begins with the case of kafuf, goes on to the case of kavuts, and now includes the case of saduk, is listing, enumerating all the cases that are possible. And that's going to be a problem for Rav Huna, because Rav Huna says that nistak is kosher, and the brisa says that saduk is possible. We're going to have to somehow differentiate between Rav Huna's case of nistak and the brisa's case of saduk if we want to somehow reconcile Rav Huna with this brisa. Now we have a case in the brisa that's very similar to the case of kafuf, and that's called akum. Akum, if you could help me out, in Yiddish it's called krum. Have you ever heard that word, krumkeit?
From
crooked, excellent, crooked. It even sounds like the same word because it's a Germanic language. So a crooked lulav is possible. Now, pashtus, a crooked lulav, if we talk about the top of the lulav, is kafuf. So what we have to figure out here is what's the difference between akum and kafuf. So again, the only thing that we know so far about kafuf is the Rashi here on the bottom of Lamed Aleph Amud Beis, who identifies rosho kafuf, that the head of the lulav is bent over, that's called kafuf. What's the case of akum? So it's interesting, Rashi waits until the next line of the braisa to say anything about akum. And that teaches us that that's what a chacham has to do. Sometimes you have to wait a little bit with patience until you get a broader picture. That's a lesson that we all have to learn. In patience. So Rashi says, look at the next two words in the braisa, and then you'll try to figure out what akum means. The braisa says, dome lemagol. What's a magol? Right? A sickle. In other words, it's shaped completely round. You're not talking about slightly bent. You're talking about kafuf legamre. It's completely bent over. Well, I don't get it. If we had already in the beginning of this braisa the case of kafuf, which means that the lulav is bent over, and that's possible. Now you're telling me akum means it's totally bent over in a very radical way. It's like a sickle. It's like a magal. I don't know why the braisa had to tell me that akum is possible if akum is the same as kafuf, but it's just a more extreme case of kafuf. If kafuf is possible, which is only partially bent over, then how much more so with a kavachomer would we exclude the case of akum? So if akum is doel lemagol and it's so bent over that it's almost like a circle, then for sure it would be possible. So why did the Brice have to bother telling me this? So in order to begin to understand what akum is about, we can now look at Rashi, because Rashi says that akum doma lemagol chada milsahi. Chado Milsa means that you shouldn't put a comma after the word akum and mistakenly conclude that there are two different categories, two different psulim that are listed here. One is akum and the other is dome lamagal. Rashi's telling me that akum is dome lamagal. If it's dome lamagal, then it's called akum. If it's so bent over that it's almost circular in its shape, then it's dome lamagal. This is certainly not hadar. This is not the same tzuras halulav, which we call it as a beautiful lulav. Beautiful lulav has to stand tall. But once again, Rashi is only adding fuel to the flames. He's making our question even, he's exacerbating our question, because now, again, I have a kal v'chomer. If Rashi is saying that akum is only possible because it's so akum that it's dome lamagal, so how is it different than kafuf? In kafuf, when it was bent over, we didn't say that it was kemagal, it was completely bent over, you know, like a round kind of thing. And now we're saying that akum is only possible because it's dome lamagal.
You answered the question, because kafuf Rashi says it's rosha.
Excellent. So Michael says the following. That the difference between kafuf and akum is that kafuf is on the top of the lulav. The top of the lulav is bent over. Akum is on the shidra itself. The spine itself is so circular in shape, it's so akum that we said it is possible. And this point is going to become clearer in just a minute, but first we have to finish the braisa. Now notice that the braisa uses the word possible here. Did you notice that? So that word possible goes back on the following cases. We'll count them. Number one, kafuf. Number two, kavutz. Number three, saduk. And number four, akum dome lamagal. Now, at this point, I would have assumed that the braisa is either completed or it's going to go on a different vein and tell me what's kosher in a lulav. But instead, to our surprise, the braisa now adds another category of posel, but under its own heading, so to speak. Do you see where you have a sof pasuk? You have a separation here between the first four cases and case number five. So let's take a look at case number five in this braisa and see if we can figure out why it was designated for its own independent psul, categorized in its own way. This is called charus. Okay, now what is charus? So guess what Rashi says? Kosher shenase charios. Charios are sort of like very hard planks or reeds that grow from the ground. And Rashi says that at some point a lulav could become like charios. Why? Because it got very, very hard, very tough. Now, if Rashi would have quit here, as we say, quit while you're ahead, I would have been okay. But now Rashi tells me a whole new story. And Rashi says that what happens to the lulav during the winter months is derech halulav she'olav noshrim b'imos hagishamim. Okay, so what does noshrim mean? Noshrim means they drop out, they fall out. And Rashi's saying, I guess as a result of the harsh winter, the lulav is going to fall apart. And the parts of the lulav are going to start, separating from the lulav itself. Now, that's a little bit odd, because if Rashi's referring to the olim, so number one, I'm going to ask the question from my premise that we're talking not about the olim over here. The charus is not the leaves, but rather the shidra itself is dried up. And Rashi's emphasizing the leaves here. Not only that, he's telling you that the leaves fall off. Secondly, I would ask the following question: is there really such a reality? Do the leaves of the lulav actually fall off during the winter season? Is that the reality? Is that the mitzvahs? So I look in the back here. I have in the back of my sifter something called Biurei Rashi. And he writes in Biurei Rashi that the word noshrim doesn't mean it falls off. The word nosher means it separates itself from the lulav. And the reason why that happens is because the shidra itself got so hard, it became so firm, that now the olim starts separating from the shidra. So there's a whole process that takes place. Now, how do I know, why do I have the chutzpah to tell you that charus is a problem in the shidra? And the reason I say so is because Rashi says the following. See, we read most of Rashi, but I deliberately omitted the last four words of Rashi. I do these kind of things from time to time. In the last four words of Rashi, he lets the cat out of the bag, and he says, "Vashidra miskasha v'nasa eitz." Now, there are two points here that we have to emphasize. Number one, Rashi is learning that the disqualification of charus is where? In what part of the lulav? In the shidra. Rashi's outspoken about that. The second point I want to make is that Rashi says nasa ke'etz. It becomes like a tree. Well, isn't a lulav coming from a tree? But the answer is, Rashi means, I think, nasa ke'etz. This is not the lulav tree. Again, physically, it's the lulav tree. But at this point, where the process of his kashus got so extreme and the shidra became so tough and so brittle, at that point Rashi says nasa eitz, it's like another tree. A lulav tree by definition has to be to some extent pliable and soft. Here we're talking about the case where, as a result of, let's say, meteorological conditions during the winter months, it became so tough that it's not typical of a lulav tree.
So why does he mention the leaves first?
So Rashi wants to show you that if you want to use a barometer and somehow determine whether or not this process has reached its fruition to such an extent that it crosses the red line, and now it's called AIDS, it's no longer called a shidra of a lulav, then notice the way the olim are now sort of rejected. They sort of spit out from the shidra, and they start separating from the shidra. The fact that the olim started separating from the shidra, that itself would not invalidate and disqualify the lulav, but at least it's room for concern. It's like pressing a red button and telling you that you better consider the possibility that what you might have in front of you is a charus. So again, just give me a minute to try to collect my thoughts. So what I'm saying is the following. That we have four psulim that are listed at the beginning of this braisa. And it would seem that all these psulim are excluded under the law of hadar, with one exception. Which exception? That I mentioned before in the name of the Ramban? Kavutz. Right? I'm going to wake you up in the middle of the night and ask you to tell me what kavutz is. And the Ramban says it's a psul of what? It's the name of the yeshiva, in case you forget it. Darchei Noam. It's a psul of Darchei Noam. And Rashi says, why is it a psul of Darchei Noam? Because there are kotzim that come out of the shidra. So we went from kavuf, which is the first case of the psul listed in this price, so which Rashi identifies with the Roshei Olim. Now we went over to the Shidra in the case of Kohutz, but it's a whole different category of Psul, and it's called Darchei Noam. Then we got to the case of Saduk. Saduk means we're back to Kofuf, meaning we're back to the Roshei Olim, because Rashi tells us that Saduk is in the Roshei Olim. And then we get to Akum, and we're in the Shidra. Do you follow me? So the pattern of the first four categories of Psul is the following pattern. It is Roshei Olim, then we go to Shidra, then we go back to Roshei Olim, and then we go back to Shidra again. And all this is listed as possible. And all this is a change in the Tzura, the way the Lulav looks, to such an extent that it's not Hadr. And the exception to that rule is Kavutz, which is a deficiency not in the Tzura Salulav, but rather in the Darchei Noam element of the Lulav. Now the Braisa says Pasul, which means Sof Pasuk. And now we have another category of Psul that completes this Braisa. And that's called Charus. And a Charus is now Pasul. What's the problem with a Charus? So Rashi says, you see that the Olim starts separating from the Shidra. And then take a look at the Shidra. and you'll see that the Shidra is absolutely tough, and as a result, Hisrachaku Pa'olim, and Rashi says, Nase Ke'etz, it becomes like an Eitz. And the Brisa again says, Possible. Okay? Then the Brisa makes one qualification. Again, I'm going to come back to everything, I just want to get to a certain point. When we finish the Brisa, and that is the next three words, finish the Brisa wants to take a step back and tell you that there are two categories of Charus. There's Charus, the real McCoy Charus, and that's possible. And then there's something called Domel Charus. I would say that Domel Charus, which literally means it's similar to a Charus, but it's not. I would say the following. It's on the way to becoming a Charus. You see, Rashi on the fourth line, say, what's the first word in the fourth line of Rashi? Hitzchil. What does Hitzchil mean? Oh. It's the beginning of a process. In other words, the winter started, and as a result, you know, things get very tough in the winter, karate mashma, in many different ways, and the Shidra began its process of getting tough. Okay, in certain countries of the world, Sukkot is already in the winter time, and Hizkil is kashos, but vadayin lo nasa eitz. Rashi says that the psul of charus is not because of a change in the physical structure of the lulav. We can tolerate any physical changes in the structure of the lulav, but the question that we have here in charus is a whole different question, and that's the question of ke'etz. Is it ke'etz? Is it so tough? So Rashi says, wait a minute, there's something called Doma L'Charus. Doma L'Charus means it's at the beginning of the process, there's already his cashews, but it's not completely tough, and therefore it's what? It is kosher. It's not an ace. Oh, you'll ask me, but wait a minute, it's not beautiful. So Rashi says, no, it is beautiful. This lulav is beautiful. Why? Because it has all its parts. You know, nothing is bent over. Not the Shidra, not the Rosh HaOlim. There are no kotzim that are coming out of the lulav. And there's no, what else did I leave out? There's no split in the lulav. Everything is fine. But the problem is that it's ke'etz. So is it ke'etz or not? If it's domeh l'charus, meaning at the beginning of the process of his kashus, it didn't get tough, it's not eitz. And if it's not eitz, and since it's not disqualified under Hador or under Dachi Noam, then it's kosher. But if it already reached its fruition and the process happened, it completed itself, and now it's kosher, it's completely kosher, that's why the olive are separated from the shidra, then it comes under the category of ke'etz. Michael?
I've got a whole problem here with the question of the roof tree hardening during the winter months. In the winter months, it rains, it pours with rain. What happens when it comes with all the rain?
I think Rashi's talking about the cold, not the rain. He calls it Yemosai Kishamim, yeah. Because it's right, that's when the rain falls. But depending upon what country you're in, for example, here in Israel, we get a very limited amount of rain, unfortunately. I mean, that's why we're so dependent upon water sources, and I don't want to get into politics here, but there are a lot of issues about water in this country. In fact, I think as of last winter, the Kinneret was down to some dangerous low level. So in certain countries, you have a double problem. Not only is there a limited amount of rain that comes down, which is true here in the Middle East, but even moreover, it gets very cold during the winter. So this is not Britain. I mean, in Manchester, I was in Manchester once, and it didn't stop raining for the 72 hours that I was in Manchester, you know. But in certain climates, it gets very, very cold. And even though there's a limited amount of rain that falls, things that grow on, you know, botanically have a tendency of, because of the cold, becoming quite brittle. In any event, leaving out the botany, because I'm not a botanist, and I'm always inviting you to be, you know, to go on Google and see if you can figure out what charus is on Google and how it works. And I mean that honestly, I'm not trying to be in any way facetious. You know, Dr. Google has now become such a major source for information. I mean, in certain universities, they want to prohibit using Google because you could actually, instead of writing a paper for a course, you just Google it. You'll probably get 15 papers and you decide which one you want. And what you could do is print out all 15 pages, attach them, because the professor doesn't read this anyway. All he does is wait. So, you know. So now we have the following question to address. Why is it that Charus is in a category of its own? Now here, Abosai, I want to point out to you something that's amazing, and it really belongs to my 1145 shiur, but I'll just give you the tip of the iceberg. Many, many Rishonim, this is not a far-flung sheet to hold, that when a min of the four minim is disqualified under the law of Hadar, that only applies on a Doraisa mitzvah, which is only on which day of Sukkot?
First day.
The first day. L'kachem l'chem b'yom harishon. The balance of Sukkot is all Derabbanan. It's based on a takana of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. We mentioned it more than once. Of Zechel and Migdash, because at the time the Migdash stood, there was a mitzvah called Shivas Yomim. And we duplicate or replicate that mitzvah even outside the Migdash to remind ourselves of the Migdash. And that's a rabbinic institution. And that's called Lulav Kol Shiva. Many Rishonim think that anything that we're learning here about a psul of Hadar only applies during the first day and not during the balance of Sukkot, because that mitzvah is radically different than the first day. For example, you don't have to own your lulav on the second day. You can borrow someone's lulav. On the first day, you have to own your lulav. And there are many other requirements in lulav that, when I say lulav, I mean all four minim, that apply strictly on the first day. And according to many Rishonim, the psulim of Hadar only apply on the first day. So, for example, we're going to have a discussion about chaser. Chaser is going to come around the bend when part of the esro was peeled off. And most poskim would tell you that that esro, when that is part, it's peeled off, part of the skin is peeled off, is kosher most of Sukkot. 6 out of 7 days of Sukkot here in the land. It's only possible the first day because it's a psul of Hadar. Even those Rishonim who say that the psule Hadar, apostle, all Shiva, that only applies if you have a better choice. But if you have no other choice, which remember we discussed Shasat Chak, then Tosis for one seems to say, that's the way the Sfasemis understood Tosis, that you make a bracha on something that's possible. Why? Because you have no choice. That's called Shasat Chak. There's no other option. And then you're allowed to take a Shasat Chak. How that works is a very complicated business, but the mechanics of it. Oh. However, what happens if I would tell you that this is not a lulav? It is past any red line that would keep it within the radar screen of a lulav. In Lamdish jargon, we would say paka shame lulav. Paka means you undermine the shame lulav and negate the shame lulav. At that point, I would say all the Rishonim would exclude it even during what?
The
6 days. That's not a psul. That's not a hadar issue. It does is nishkin lulav. And the nafkamina will be not only the other 6 days, but whether or not b'shasat chak I can take something that has lost, it's forfeited, it's shame lulav. So now let's go back to the drawing board. Why is it that the Braisa has 4 cases of disqualifications listed with a sof pasuk apostle, and now picks up the case of Charus on the separate agenda, on the separate heading?
Because it wants to help us understand the distinction between things that are no longer shem lulav and things.
Exactly. That the first four are lulavim, albeit that possible because of the absence of hadar. The tzuras alulav has changed. I would even go as far as to say that according to the Ramban, in the case of Kavutz, which is a chisorin in what? Darkei Noam. It still is a lulav. Again, it's not Darkei Noam. You want to know which species is a lulav, then Darkei Noam will exclude certain species because they're full of dangerous thorns. But if you talk about a lulav and it has thorns in it, okay, that's something that you want to avoid on the first day, and it's not Darkei Noam, but for the rest of the balance of the Yom Tov, you can use it, and certainly B'shasat Chak you can use if you have no other lulav. But when we get to the case of Charus, Rashi says, how heavy was the hiskashus here? To the point that Rashi equates it with what? Have we forgotten the Rashi? Okay, this is not good. Not good news for me. Okay. Let's go back to Rashi again. 3 lines from the top. Rashi's last 2 words in his whole presentation is Nasa Eitz. Okay? This has nothing to do with politics here. Nasa Eitz. Nasa Eitz means it became
a tree.
A tree. A tree meaning a tree that's not a lulav tree. Why does Rashi tell me this? Rashi was not compelled to add these 2 very dramatic words, nasakates. And not only that, the Braisa felt compelled to tell you that if it's domel charus, If it's only at the beginning of this process of iskashus, then it's kosher. What happened to the psul of hodah? The answer is we're not talking about the psul of hodah. We're asking one question only. Is it eitz or is it not eitz? And if this kashus is only at the initial inception stage, then it's still considered an eitz, and I'll prove it to you. Rashi says, Dome Lecharus, four lines from the bottom, from the top, and he says, Vadayin lo nasa eitz. You know, you put that Rashi together with the previous line in Rashi when he talks about charus, and you see that the whole issue about charus hinges upon whether it's already eitz or it hasn't yet become eitz. It's not that hard and tough that it's eitz. And I would claim the following, I have no proof of this, that what the Braisa wants to emphasize is this psul is a much different kind of a psul. The Braisa doesn't spell out the nafkiminis, the repercussions, but the repercussions would be that if it's called an eitz, the way Rashi interprets it, thus hastened ken lulav, therefore I would not allow to use it even for the balance of Yom Tov, even for the 6 days, nor would I allow to use it even in a shasadcha. Okay. Rabosai, which word in this Braisa, for our purposes today, is the most critical word?
Eitz.
No, eitz doesn't appear in the Braisa. In the Braisa itself, which word, again, let's go back to the beginning. Amar Rav Huna, right? What was Rav Huna's point? Lo shanu ela niktam rosho, aval nistak kosher. Which is the most important word now in the Braisa for our purposes?
Saduk.
Correct, saduk. Saduk is nistak, which means that there's a split in the top leaves. So what are we going to do now? We have Rav Huna who establishes that Nistak is kosher. We have the Braisa that says clearly that Saduk is possible. Rav Papa wants to reconcile it. When the Braisa is talking about Saduk, it's a very extreme case of Saduk. It's not just a split. It's a change in the very nature of the lulav. The Ovid Kehimnak, we all know what a himnak is, right? That's something that you rest on in your backyard, a himnak. It goes back and forth. No, that's a hammer. Sorry. What's a himnak? Himnak is a Greek word. Himnak is a certain utensil that's used primarily by scribes, which are called sofrim. Rashi gives you the whole spiel here. And the top of this vessel is split. Okay? Here, I'll show you a picture of it. Here, this is himnak. If you want to pass it around, show and tell here. Okay, it's on page Kuf Vav in this particular picture book. I call it my picture book. And it basically looks like this. Okay? So Rashi tells us the following. First of all, he tells you what it is in Old French. It's a kind of a fork, and it's made of... Again, it's a fork that doesn't have four...
Tines.
What's it called?
Tines.
How do you spell it?
T-I-N-E.
T-I-N-E. It doesn't have four tines. It only has two tines. It's a two-tiner.
Okay. Ooh,
that was good. Well, I just wanted to see if you're awake.
I loved it.
I see you appreciate my humor as much as my wife does. I'm really in trouble.
I like that one.
Okay. And Rashi tells you, Yeshlo Shnei Roshim, it has two heads to it as it splits on top. Okay. Now, Rashi gives a very important spiel here at the end of this long Rashi. After he tells you how the scribes use this kli, which I'm skipping right now, he tells you two amazing things about Saduk. Saduk Kehimnak. First, he tells you that Kach, again, I would love you to underline these words, Kach Gadel Haluav. What does that mean, Kach Gadel Haluav? Did the lulav get smashed?
It's not gross.
It didn't fall on the ground. You know, your two-year-old didn't come, your two-month-old, didn't come along and throw it on the ground and it split on top. That's not what happened. But Rashi says, Kach Gadel Haluav. This is the lulav in nature. Now, Rabosai, let me ask you a knee-jerk question. Knee-jerk reaction. But don't look at Rashi. When I tell you that this strange kind of lulav, meaning it's not your classical lulav, was born that way, is that good for the Jews or bad for the Jews? Is that a reason to lahachmir and say that it's possible, or a reason lahakel?
Good for the Jews.
and say that it's kosher.
It should be kosher.
Excellent. It should be kosher. Very strange. Rashi is telling me that this sadu kehamnik is possible because that's the way it was created. That's the way it looks when it grows on the tree. I would have said, as we say in Yiddish, pukfaker, just the opposite. If that's the way it grows on the tree, that's not a psul. Now Rashi complicates the story. And Rashi says, kimin shtei shidros. Rashi says that the psul of kahamnik is not a psul in the olim, which I would have said intuitively, but rather it's a psul in the shidra. Now wait a second. A shidra is a spine. Rashi's saying that this luav called kahamnik has two spines. No, if it has two spines, it's kolshkin, I don't want to use it. If I can be yotzei the mitzvah luav with one spine, why can't I be yotzei the mitzvah of luav with two spines? Just two is better than one.
Baltosif.
I wouldn't say baltosif, but of course baltosif would mean that you take a different min. But what I would say is that this is such a deformity in the luav that it doesn't really look like a luav. So keep in mind two things. Number one, that Rashi holds that the problem of kehimnik is not because the top of the luav has a split in it, because in fact, according to Rav Huna, if the top of the luav has a split in it, what's the status of that luav? It's kosher. But when is it possible? When it looks like such a freaky luav that it has two shidros. The Torah wants you to take a luav that has only one shidra, and this has two shidros. So again, if you would split it in such a way that the shidra looks like it has two shidros, maybe it would be kosher. I don't know. Rashi doesn't commit himself one with the other. But Rashi's telling me the reason why this luav is possible is because it really has two shidros, and that's the way it was born.
Is it really having two, or does it just appear to have two?
I think Rashi is saying, if you take a look, that it really has two shidros. Because Rashi says the following. He says, Machtis olav lekan, umachtis olav lekan. In other words, there are olim that are coming out of both of these shidros. There's olim on the right side and olim on the left side. You know, the olim on the right side are related to the shidra on the right, and the olim on the left to the left. And Rashi is saying that that's basically like two lulavim. I wouldn't go as far as to say baltosim, Jerry, but what I would say is
Siamese
twins. Excellent. I wrote it down on my own paper. Siamese lulavim. So again, the Gemara is saying according to Rav Papa that Rav Huna is not a problem with this brisa. I can reconcile it. Rav Huna is talking about a split in the lulav in the olam elyonim, but it's not two shidros. Now again, if that split became so profound that it went all the way down the middle of the spine and then the spine got split, that would probably be possible. But that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about a split in the Rashi olam. But then there's another problem. There's something where when you look at the Rashi olam, as we saw in the picture, and they split, that if you go down, you'll see it's because of two shidros, Rashi says. And that's the way it was born. And it's kind of like a freak of nature. It's Siamese twins. Now, what the halachic status is of Siamese twins, that's a fascinating question. I once gave a drush about that here on Shabbos before Muslim. You know, Shlomo Melech says that he tested to see whether Siamese twins are considered one entity or two entities. He dropped some hot water on one head, and he wanted to see if the other head would start crying. And it's a philosophical idea that if we feel each other's pain, then we're part of one entity. In any event, this is called the famous kehimnik. So if I wake up in the middle of the night, again, and this time you're ready to shoot me, because I did it twice in a row, so then you know, and I ask you what a hymnic is, so you'll say, get the hymnic out of here. Don't wake me up. I got to get up early tomorrow for work, and you wake me up in the middle of the night. Okay. I only woke you up because I wanted to see if you really know what a hymnic is. Again, a hymnic is a lulav that has, according to Rashi, shtei shidros, and you'll see it on top where the olim belong to one side and the other olim belong to the other side. Now, Rabosa, I asked you before, what's the difference between kafuf and akum? Right? We said that akum is a more radical form, a more extreme case of kafuf, where it's not just bent over, but it's curved like a sickle. And we were wondering, what's the difference? So far we had one difference, where kafuf is on the top of the lulav, and akum is in the middle of the lulav. But I want to show you now that this difference between kafuf and akum actually cuts ice. It's a nafkamina. Why? Because take a look at what Rava says. Akum doma lamakum. Amar Rava. La Amaran. When do we say that this lulav that's completely distorted, it's completely shaped like a round shape, it bent over, is possible? La Amaran, we'd only say that Ella in a case of Lefanov. Avol Yachorov Briyasohu. Okay, this is a bit of a challenge, this Gemara. What's Lefanov and what's Liachov? So Rashi tells us that if you put a lulav in front of your eyes, you'll see that there are two sides to the lulav. One side of the lulav, which faces you at this point, has the olam. You see the olam. And if you turn the lulav the other way around, basically what are you going to look at? The shidra. And now we have to figure out, when is a lulav possible because it's akum? Is it akum in this direction? Again, I wish I had a lulav in front of me. Maybe there's a picture of it. I don't know. So let's imagine, again, this is not pliable, but let's imagine this is my lulav. These are the olim. That's called lefanov. And this is the shidra if you turn it around. So Rashi says that there are two possibilities of this akum. One would be lefanov, towards me, meaning towards the face of the lulav, it's curved. And one is lachorov, where it's curved towards the outside. And the amazing thing is that the Gemara says that if it's curved towards the outside, that's not possible. And akum is, even though it's like a sickle, that's how radical of a curve it is, but the only psul of akum is lefanov. Now, in the case of kafuf, we didn't make any distinction between lefanov and leachorov. It doesn't matter in which way and facing which direction the top olim of the lulav are bent over. But when we get to the shidra, now we want to make a radical change in the tsuras ha-lulav, and that radical change only applies when the lulav, again, if this is the face of the lulav, which is called milafanov, is all distorted in this way. That's called a distortion that completely undermines the status of the lulav. It has no hadar whatsoever. But if it's bent the other way, and again, I can't move my hand enough to show you how bent it is, it's completely like a magal, it's kosher. Now, in order to understand the difference, we have to add two words, which are the last two words of the Gemara. The Gemara has to, Rav has to explain himself. Why is it that lachorov, if it's bent backwards, it's kosher? And here, the Gemara says the exact opposite of what we've been claiming all along. Briyasahu. That's the way it's born. So this would substantiate my intuitive position that I mentioned before, Richard, you agreed with me, that if it's natural, if that's the way it's created in nature, that should be a reason to kasher the lulav. And apparently in nature, again, we have to Google this, when the lulav bends over backwards, that's something that is natural in the lulav. Yeah. So now you're telling me that because it's natural, it's kosher. I'm a very happy camper. Because that's what I would have said. If that's the way it exists in nature, then that should be a reason lahakshir. But yet, in the case of Hamnik, there we said that Hamnik, Rashi emphasizes, is nolad, is born hamnik, split on the top, and that's why it's possible. So what is it? If it's natural and that's the way it's born in creation, is that a reason to passel it, like in the case of hamnik? Or is that a reason to be machshir it and qualify as a lulav in the case of akum miliachorov? So I looked for Rashi to see if he would save the day for me. And Rashi says the following. Rashi says that shidra, oh, this is amazing. Rashi gives me a whole spiel about what is the shidra of a lulav, and why is it called a shidra? I honestly don't understand why Rashi all of a sudden woke up. I mean, he told me already that the psul of akum is a psul in the shidra. And he told me that Hamnik was a psul in the shidra because it has two shidros. And now all of a sudden, when he gets to the case of Akum Domal Magal, he decides to give me a whole explanation of what the shidra is. And he starts comparing it to animals, the spinal column of an animal, and where the rib cage comes out of, the ribs come out of it, and the vertebrae. I don't know, honestly, why. I'd have to do a lot more research to try to figure out why Rashi all of a sudden decided to wake up and give me a whole spiel. But I would like to suggest the following. That what the Gemara means here by Briyasahi, and that's why if it's Liachorov, it's kosher, the case of Akum, is that this is common in creation. I'm adding a word here to the Gemara, and it's a big chutzpah on my part, but it's the only way I can maintain my sanity. There are two types of deformities. We spoke about a Siamese lulav as two shidros instead of one. And that's the case of Kahamnik. That case is a freak of nature. Yes, it was born that way, and that's why I determined it has two shidros, but that's, you know, that's a rare freak in nature. You know, that's a genetic, what do we call it?
Deformity,
anomaly. The Gemara wants to point out that a curved lulav means the shidra is curved. That's not an anomaly in nature. I wouldn't say that your average lulav on the tree looks like that, but there are many, let's call it 30%, 20% of the lulavim look like that. And that's what the Gemara means. That can't be considered a deformity. It is so common amongst the lulavim that it bends in that direction. Again, I don't know exactly why. For that we need Google, right? But if we determine that based on the laws of nature it bends in that direction, that's the way the wind blows it, and it bends, then that can't be a possible lulav, because that's the way a lulav looks like, that's the way it grows on the tree. Again, not all lulavim, but a substantial representation of lulav.
Does any of this have anything to do with the ability to weigh lulav? That it would restrict you?
I would say that what you have in mind is called, what's the word for it? Just one second. What is it called? Just one second. I think it's called charusa. Again, the two words that are very similar. There's a word charus and there's a word charusa. Maybe it's not the charusa. There's another name for it in the Gemara. What time is it now? I just want to finish to a certain point.
24 minutes after.
24, so we have six more minutes. It could be that's called Sine Abarza. We'll see if in the next 6 minutes I can answer your question, Steve. But that's going to come up in the Gemara. There's a certain type of lulav where you can't shake the lulav. And that's going to be possible. But I've got the name of it right now. Omar Rav Nachman, Litzdadin. Rav Nachman raises the following question. We've been speaking about two cases of akum. Either the curvature was inwardly or it was outwardly. What if the curvature was to one side or the other? It doesn't curve towards the front or towards the back, but towards one of the two studs. Says Rav Nachman, Litzdadim kilafanav dami. The only case that's natural and it defines it as within the parameters of a lulav is the case of lefanav, when it bends, I'm sorry, of lachorav, excuse me, when it bends towards the outside. But if it bends in any of the other three possible directions, then it's possible. That's the same status as kilafanav dami. The Amrile, but there was another version of Rav Nachman, Kilachorav Dom. Then on the contrary, there's only one case that's a real abnormal lulav, and that's possible, and that's the case of Lefanov. But all other directions are considered Lachorav and their Kosh. Omar Rava, another statement of Rava, Hai Lulva Disolik Bechad Hutza Balmumhu Uposel. If you have a lulav and all its leaves, all its olive, grow on one side, that's called a balmum. Now the word balmum, the phrase balmum, usually appears in kudshim, and it refers to something that is radically possible, it's completely disqualified. It's just It's just blemished in such a basic way that we can't bring it on the Mizbeach. And once again, I'm going to wonder out loud if perhaps what the Gemara, what Rav is doing here by adding the two words Balmum, is he wants to tell you to what extreme is this Lulav possible? It only has Olim on one side. Chad Hutza means on one side. And maybe Rav wants to tell you that it's a Balmum. A Balmum means you can't use it neither on the first day nor on the other 6 days. Neither whether you have another lulav or even if you don't have another lulav, it's completely gone. That's called a baal mum. Nifritzu olav. If, let's say, the olim were completely separated from the lulav, then it's possible. But nifridu olav, if they're still hanging on and they're not totally separated, then it's kosher. Omar Rav, Omar Apop, excuse me. Nifritzu de Ovid ki chufya, nifridu de ifrud ifrude. What Rav Papa wants to tell me is that in the case of nifritzu, then the lulav becomes like a broom. You know, the spikes of the broom are separated one from the other. However, you can tie them together and attach them. And therefore, this lulav is kosher. Nifridu, but at the point in which they are completely separated from the spine, that's already a more radical case. And there, it's not like, you know, it's kind of like they're completely hanging, they're basically detached from the shoe. That's a more extreme case, and that's going to be possible. Boy Rav Papa, and with this we'll conclude. Nechlaka tiomis. The tiomis, as we said, is that one leaf that goes through the lulav all the way to the top. It's your top leaf. And it's also called a twin in a sense. A tiomis means a twin because every leaf of the lulav, if you've ever done an experiment, you'll know what I mean, can be separated into two, can be opened into two. So the tiomis is that twin that goes all the way to the top. And Rav Papa wants to know what happens if nechlaka, if it means that this top olev became separated, it became split into two, so now it becomes two different olev. Is that still called a tiomis? Mahu, what's the status of that loop? Okay, Rabosei, so we'll stop here. I wish everyone a great day. And if you're interested, tomorrow we'll talk about the Tiyomis. That's going to be
our Friday, Rabbi.
Oh, I mean to say Sunday. Sure. Okay, I wish everyone a great Shabbos. Okay, Shabbos, Parshas Kitetzeh. But don't go too far.
I like to think about the two-timer, by the way.
You liked it?
I thought it was very funny.
Okay.
In terms of a Balmum...
You know what we say, Ben? Flattery will get you everywhere. If you like my sense of humor, puts you into a freaky category.
Very funny.
So a Balmum, there isn't a category of moon that will over, that'll pass.
No. This won't pass.
This won't pass. But the question is, the distinction between kafuf and akuf, maybe one of them is irreparable, and the other one can actually be fixed.
I would say that's the difference between nifridu and nifritzu. But in kafuf and akuf, I think what's going to happen is you try to straighten it out, something's going to break off.
Because I was almost expecting a comparison. Doesn't in Kohelet they use the word akum? Something that is bent cannot be, or how can he repair something that has been bent or something?
Oh.
I was kind of expecting...
Me'uvas is the word that Kohel sees. Me'uvas.
Got it. Okay.
Me'uvas means distortion. Uh-huh. Now, the word distortion, as opposed to curvature, means that your midos, your attributes are distorted. You know, it's like that case that I mentioned, I don't know if you were there, that happened to Rabbi Shurin Sukkah. No, maybe that was in a different context. So I was sitting in Rabbi Shurin Sukkah, it was during Shemitah. And if you know Rabbi Shurin's house, he's on the bottom floor, so Sukkah's outside. And if you look up, you'll see from the top floors a bunch of Sukkahs. So someone's rubbish fell from a sukkah. And there were potato peels, and there were small pieces of plastic. It was really disgusting. And I remember Esther Shurin, you know, looking at us, and then I looking at my wife, like, misbehavior, you know. What? Anyway, 5 minutes later, a young fellow, a teenager, comes running down, knocks on the sukkah, comes into the sukkah, and he starts picking up the rubbish. But he only picks up the potato peels. And he looks at us as he's going out. We're all amazed, like, you know, Chavez. And you're cleaning up what you messed up. Why the potato peels? And he says two words, and then he runs away. Kedusha Shviz. He was only interested in cleaning the potato peels because there was some potato attached and it had the sanctity of Shviz.
Because of his mitzvah. But in terms of after Recha Komo,
this is what I call Mu'uvas. This is what Shlomo HaMelech and Kohelis yells and screams about. A distorted system of nidos, of ethics.
I can see why.
Rosalati used to say that you can take a Sefer Torah and you can kill someone with a Sefer Torah. It's heavy enough.
Right. But is it right?
And Rosalati used that as a symbol for people who, for the sake of Torah, they'll murder you. They'll, you know, maybe not physically, but...
You see, unfortunately...
Slander
you. Unfortunately, you see that in Israel today.
And all the sake for the sake of Torah. You know that in the old days, back in Europe, they didn't have water faucets and systems like we have. I'm going back 150 years ago. They had water carriers. Mm-hmm. And they, you know, two buckets on both sides. Now, for the Tilus Yadayim, you could wash the minimum or you could wash the maximum. So Rabbi Yisrael is standing on line and a student in front of him is doing the Tilus Yadayim. And he's doing this side and that side and this side and that side. Say Rabbi Yisrael, you want to be machmir in the midst of the Tilus Yadayim on whose cheshbon? Because this guy's going to have to schlep more water. It's awesome to do such a thing. To see your religiosity from a broader perspective in terms of caring about others.
Rabbi Kahana always said, Hashem didn't give us the Torah to be stupid. Which is exactly the same idea.
Same idea.
Just phrased a little more street level.
The first mitzvah was don't be stupid. That's before the 613. A few weeks ago, I was standing in shul. It was in the shtiblok, so it's quite crowded. And the guy next to me is putting on his talus. He almost took out my arm. I'm telling you, I got smacked in the face by his tzitzis.
Yeah,
get whipped by his tzitzis. Yeah. So, you know, I got his bach who has his cheshbon, he wants me to be whipped. But what's his cheshbon? You know?
I know.
What heck does he have to whip me with his tzitzis?
I've had that done to me.
And that's what I call ma'uvas in Kohelis's terminology.
And if you get it in the face, it can really hurt.
Yeah, I got it right across here. I mean, it missed my eye by a millimeter, you know. Alright, now I have to let me see if the secretary is here. So Yehuda was on board today, I think.
Yes.
That's good. Okay. So and Ben, I do want to try WebEx. I'm very eager to try WebEx because the answer WebEx
is on your computer.
But you know what? I got a message from WebEx. This message WebEx is yours, right? Your account?
Yeah, because we didn't.
I just
have your
got a message from WebEx that they're going to cut me out because it's like 6 months or a year since I used WebEx. Do you know how to tell them if I show you where they sent me this message that I just don't remember my password? Did you know how to do that?
Well, the thing is, they only start counting when you download it. They start counting the 6 months from when you download.
No, but it seems like if I would now plug in, they would give me another 6 months. That's the impression I got. But I just don't know how to plug in because I don't have my...
Let me try it in a few minutes.
Yeah, not now. I'm just saying if you have time. Okay. Okay.
I'm not sure I still understand the difference between Nifrit Su and Nifrit Do.
Okay, so then I should really work harder. The truth is that I got a little flustered, you know, I saw the time was going.
No. So if you,
I didn't get a chance.
If you pick up tomorrow, that's fine. I mean, Sunday.
So, Mr. Shem, on Sunday, we'll talk about the difference between Nifrit Su and Nifrit Do.
I mean, even Art Scroll